All right, folks, I'm going to call this meeting the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission to order for Wednesday, September 18th, 2024. Please set your phones on stun and let's all stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, nice to see you. Will you please call roll?
Tom McKenzie. Absent. Tom Lazzetti.
Present.
Andrew Brodnick.
Present.
Peter Hendricks.
Present.
Dave Castellanos.
Present.
Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert Ochi.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. We have a quorum. Next up is the approval of minutes from August 21st, 2024. Any modifications, changes, motions? What say you, gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we approve the minutes as presented.
There's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Then the second, Ms. Lambert, pick one. Any discussion? Be there none, just the humor, Mr. Wicklund. Mrs. Lambert, will you do a roll call, please?
Tom
Gazzetti?
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick?
Yes.
Derek Nimitz?
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
Ron Baer?
Yes.
Robert Ochi?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Moving right along, the chairman's report, being the chairman and humbled by such. This is September. It has been 16 years since September 2008. When you see what happens when you do not do the maintenance and upkeep of a federal flood control project. It's the most important aspect of what we do is to make sure something like that never happens again in our community. It's important to remember why we're here, what we're doing, and the goal of what we're trying to accomplish. First and foremost, which is a federal flood control project to make sure our community doesn't have to go through, you know, $1 billion worth of damage to realize that something as fundamental as infrastructure is critical to the community as a whole. This is a true economic development project by getting that levy completed, having it certified every year. There's at least 4,000 properties no longer having to pay mandatory federal flood insurance as a part of any lien that they have on that property. That's about, how much is it, Dan? We figured 4 million?
Yeah, just over 4.
About $4 million every year that goes back into the community just based on the aspect of that mandatory flood insurance no longer having to go as a part of that. Owning inside the watershed. Moving along as we continue to do these types of projects, not only are we worrying about the river, but also the watershed in and of itself, and making sure that everything that it, as a system works the way it's supposed to in the most efficient and effective way possible. If you never had a chance recently to stop and look at those pictures, please humor yourself by at least seeing why we're doing what we're doing. That being said, next up is a finance report. We're going to need an approval of those finances to be able to move forward. Let's say, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the claims for September 2024 in the amount of $577,537.34.
There's a motion to approve the claims for September 2024. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second, some discussion. Let's start with Mr. Repay.
We'll go briefly, two larger ones to the town of Maryville, their reimbursements for their projects, one for Hickory Ridge Flood Control, as well as one for Hayes Farm Drainage, one's $81,000, the other one's $23,425. Our liability insurance is $73,435. NCAP did a treatment on our in-project mitigation that is located just off of Chase Street, just to the west. It's a yearly item, and this is now the season to do that. So that's 14.7. Our CNH mowing, which was the fourth cycle, which was done about mid-August, we'll probably just do one more so long as this good weather holds up. And that's $27,500. And then we've got DLZ with respect to Access Crossing. We worked with them and Wolverine Pipeline has made all the corrective measures on the pipeline. There are still a couple issues with the pipeline where it has minimal coverage, which that's a separate matter that we're not dealing with. But as far as the issues actually in the pipe themselves, have been completed, and they were completed about 2 weeks ago. And then HWC was about bank stabilization. That was the work that is around Grant Street to Chase Street, as well as the area off of Northcott in Munster and Hammond, and then along State Line Avenue, which is where the toe is eroding a little bit over the constant years of wear and tear. And that's in the 408 process. So you know how that works out for us. Expedition. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to.
Is there any question for Mr. Repay?
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, the Hassey construction, where was that I-65 and 94? What was that related to?
That's right by Bellevue, which is by Colorado Street on the south side of the expressway. It's a feeder from Lake Station that goes into through Bellevue and ultimately under 94. It's a small, it's about 16-inch pipe. Court flagged it as being a trouble spot. We cleared it all out. It's a little remote area, but it took a little time. And that was a question of, I think Commissioner Broderick asked me earlier about why it took some time, but there was some issues with the claim or invoice.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Repay, the last thing you were just talking about with DLZ, you said something about the Wolverine pipe. You may not have enough cover, but that's not really our scope.
So last year, I think about this time, maybe a little bit earlier, Wolverine contacted us because of some issues that they had found during some of their routine testing. Some of the problems that existed were actually pipe integrity issues, where the integrity of the pipe has been wearing away and could cause some issues. Explosions, I say.
Yes, yes.
Right. Yeah, natural. I mean, it's, I think it's 20 some inches, I believe, if I'm correct. So we have to sort of provide them access, give them over our easement to allow them on the property to get it, you know, to get there and fix it. So one of them, the most notable one, or one of the most notable ones, is just off of Clark Street, where we actually got the marshmaster from the town of Maryville to mow the area so they can get to the site. Then they put down the boards, the proper covering to get across through that. And ultimately, we're going to turn that into an environmental area anyways. But because the way the Corps designed the levee, the water was standing on top of those pipes. And the way that those pipes were designed, it was not designed to be covered with water or submerged in water. So we helped them sort of partner with them to address. Now, that's one side of it with integrity. The other side, there are some areas, I believe there are two, if I'm correct, that are not covered with the proper amount of soil,
right.
Which is complicated. Some areas where we do some maintenance, and they have recommended that we do not go near that for the sake of, if in the event one of our crews or something nicks it, hits it, it doesn't take very much to cause a problem. So that's something that they're working on separately, but as a part of the whole project. But as far as the integrity ones, where they have to actually replace and stop it, that's one. Now they're going to come back. My understanding is to do coverage on them. I don't know when that schedule
is. That's Wolverine. So we paid DLC to do it.
We helped design the overage to get an access through or over the ditches as a way to expedite it for permitting purposes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Repay? Either none, there's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Conrad Debbie.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnick.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellano.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ogie.
Yes.
Lavon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along, next up has to do with Project Tracker, tied in Executive Director's Report. Mr. Repay, what is going on in the field?
The good news is the PLCs have finally arrived. They had two delays on them. They will be installed this week. I was hoping that I was going to get a call today, but they're not. But
I'm sorry, a PLC, just for those that don't know the alphabet.
It's the motherboard of the pump station. So it makes sure that the pump is working the way it's supposed to work, so it doesn't throw off alarms, which we've basically been babysitting Burr, Grant East, and Grant West, and now Marshalltown for the last probably 9 months, meaning sometimes it will throw off a alarm that's high temp failure, and it's a day like this where there's no water. So you have to check. And Anthony and I had a discussion earlier where, you know, we get notices. Glenn gets the first notice, and then if they don't respond, I get the notice. So if it's off at 3 a.m, my first response is to go on my computer and check the cameras to make sure that people aren't stealing copper, because that's usually what was a thing that was happening. But now with the PLCs going down, it would throw off alarms left and right. And so now with the new PLCs, we won't necessarily have to babysit them. So hopefully those will all be in by next week sometime, whether the weather looks like it's cooperating. So that will be for Grant East, Grant West, and Burr North. And then as a part of it, Marshalltown, you saw it in the claims through Superior Engineering, Marshalltown will be upgraded, although that is not a part of this installation because Marshalltown was ordered a little bit later. So Marshalltown will be a little bit later, but Marshalltown thankfully is a much smaller station that handles a lot less water than say both Grant Streets and Burr Street. So that's a plus. The Natural Spring, I'm happy to report that NIPSCO, the City of Gary, and Midwestern Electric all got together, and we now have power at the Natural Spring. So now when the daylight gets less and people still want to get water at 4 o'clock, there'll be lights. Our cameras will be up here soon so that if someone wants to be a knucklehead, we'll have a camera there for them to view their activities.
Have there been issues there?
Yes. We haven't been able to get power because of it needing to go across the railroad. And then we had a change of supervisors at NIPSCO. And then we had a whole bunch of other things. And so the long and short of it is, the good news is we have power. The power is working. I was there to see it. And so it's a good thing. And I'm going to stay positive. And when the cameras go up, we'll add that to our grouping of cameras that we already have at all of our pump stations, where we can monitor all sorts of things, whether it's horseback riding, people hanging out, or doing good things. So,
I have a question for Dan. Dan, sure. On the installation of the cameras, when do you expect that to come up?
We already have the card from Verizon, so, and we already know the cameras are there. We notified them when we were notified there was power on Monday, so. I don't imagine it being too long because they also have to service some of the other cameras that may need to be a little bit cleaned up and repositioned. But I don't have an exact thing, but I would tell you by next meeting, I would envision that those cameras would be up.
So we can start giving the public notice that there's going to be some cameras for those who...
Yeah, you don't have to tell them that there's going to be cameras there. I'd rather them not know that there's cameras.
I think that we should let them know that they're going to stop any of that dumping that's been going on at that particular location. Just let them know that.
Yeah, we did replace the metal grate that was there that was relieved of its duties because, you know, that was no camera there to see that. But now that the cameras will be up, we'll put that back in place. And hopefully whoever wants to scrap a nice time will have a good license plate of them. So still working on doing the Kennedy Avenue bridge design. We awarded the seal coating and paving. That should begin here soon before the end of the year. General maintenance. And I'm going to see if I can do it, although I should probably, if I was smart, do it before I started talking. And I will show you the areas that we have been working on. That's not going to be it. Of course, Bill, I'm going to work on this really hard.
At least you're consistent.
I know. It's here. I can tell you. There it is. Am I there? Did I get up on the board? It's paused. Zoom share. Stop it. Am I good now? I'm saying it's their fault. That's a lot of pressure on me right now. It's all right. Well, we're just going to go with it. The area that we're in question is between Colfax and the railroad tracks as you go to the west. It's as if you're going towards Klein Avenue. So initially, there was a report of a blockage at that bridge, and we had to work with the Lake County Highway because there was a tonnage that was not to be exceeded on it. So we tried to work from the bridge with small machines to get it out. It re-clogged itself. Commissioner Wyszynski brought it to my attention, so we ended up sending in the floating excavator, which so we didn't have to work off the bridge deck anymore. And what was found was there was a lot of blockage up even further going to the west, all the way to the railroad track. So we went to the railroad track for a couple of reasons. A, we can't go any further than the railroad tracks. Also, there's two gas lines that run north and south at that location, and we don't necessarily want to be dragging branches and other deciduous vegetation through that. It's a snag, that would be a problem. So we cleaned it, it's on the side, we're waiting for it to be picked up as to be disposed of. And so that's number one. We're also working in Hart's Ditch between 45th and Twin Creek, which is an area that we had done 7 years ago. We had a lot of downed trees in that area. It was the only area that we haven't cleaned. Everything else south or north of that location has been cleaned over the years. It's limited accessibility. We were able to get in through a park, and that's how that's
you're talking about clearing. You're not talking about another phase of the restoration.
No, just clearing dead trees, old cottonwoods, old elms that have fallen either through wind, through animals or creatures or disease. And so we cleaned that up, and you talk about able to doing a lot of maintenance now that it's dry. We're trying to really take advantage of that right now, especially if there's blockages. If there's not blockages, we will normally wait till fall when the leaves have fallen off the trees, and it's a lot easier, hopefully frozen ground, although it's been 85 degrees today, so not sure if that's going to happen. Working with Burke on the deep tunnel or deep river Turkey Run, Turkey Creek report, we saw the actual data that, you know, with the, you know, the inches saved and how much we can seek as far as relief, as far as we bought property along Beaver Dam Ditch. But now they're going to issue a report, which we're going to use as sort of our checklist as to addressing problems, whether they're undersized culverts under old railroads or undersized or culverts that have collapsed that they feel as though are pinch points. We're going to handle that, and that's why we're going forward with Crown Points today, because we're going to address others in the future. The sandbar update, I talked to some of you briefly, had a great conversation and email experience exchange this afternoon with the Corps with respect to the sandbar. We've met out there last month, and they said it would be 30 days, and now they gave us a litany of items that they Shocking. Felt that they needed to be changed. If you read through them, not say that you have already, but if you want to, it's mainly I call grammatical, but we'll answer them and get it done, and hopefully someday soon that the expedited 408 process will come to work for us. So that's my little report on the sandbar, Lake George Dam, possibly, you know, as a part of also the Deep River Turkey Creek report. There was some relief given to upstream from the dam. I believe the mayor and his staff would like to pursue that dam rework so that it will help relieve some of the pressure upstream and also possibly be a amenity for his community. The biggest problem at that dam currently is there's no way to draw the water down prior to a large event. They have one sluice gate that is not really that effective. It hasn't been since I started, and what we think would work would be almost to cut the whole levee down a touch, and during high flow would be sort of a stepped approach as to allowing water to go down without negatively impacting the folks from Lake Station. So that's something that's out there. And then our good friends from the Lake County Collaborative are here to speak to you about the Marshalltown area and their 60% plans as to what they would like to do. before they move to the 100%, they want to make sure that you're relatively on board with their thought
right,
process.
Before we go down to introducing them, is there any questions for Mr. Repay and what's going on in the field?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
The last thing you talked about, Dan, yeah. is the Lake North Dam
yeah.
the impact that it would do downstream. Mm-hmm. Would be minimal or not at all any difference that would impact Lake Station?
By the time I got the Lake Station, it would be zero. The biggest impact would be the area between the dam and the railroad, which I think the rise was 4 inches over normal, which is 4 inches isn't necessarily that much of a deal when it comes into Duck Creek at that location. But once it gets down to the dam at 29th and Liverpool, so 29th and Wyoming, there is no impact. It sort of just goes away because that's a few miles down the path.
Because it's coming down, 51 in that particular area and then coming back west?
Well, eventually,
yeah, it
crossed.
I don't know what that is. He's doing a great job.
Thank you. It crosses 51 two times, actually. So it does that circle right by the Lake Station Park. And then comes around by the McDonald's and then goes by Veterans Park and then goes through. So that whole area has now been cleaned from debris. Not to say there's not debris in it now because it's been a few years, but it takes a long, and I think it's 4 or 5 miles before it gets down to, in river miles, down to where the dam is.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Repay? I got one on Project Tracker. I've seen a number of projects that are showing 100% complete. Are we moving up when it's 100% paid out, 100% complete? When are we transitioning some of these construction? And then same with regards to any of the engineering and whatnot. How are we keeping up with those as far as helping move things along? And are any of them of concern as it relates to water flowing downhill?
Well, the ones that are 100%, I believe, are the ones that you just passed today as far as the claims. So after you pass those claims, they will then move into the red category, which means they're done. So they'll flip off of this side of it. The town of Maryville tends to wait till the very end and then they ask for reimbursement later, as opposed to some other communities, they go and they draw it down. So for your two situations, the 100% for Hayes Farm and then the Hickory Ridge, those are 100% as of your approval of the claims today. You won't see them there next month.
Mr. Chairman, I have Thank a you. Similar question. Kind
yes.
of the opposite end. There's about 6, 7, 8, 10 projects
yeah.
that are pretty old with no spending. How do we handle it? I'm sure we just keep the money in our account.
We encumber it. But oh, I mean,
so
it
do
it, yeah, we account for it.
Yeah.
It would certainly be, I mean, we could reach out to them and say, hey, are you going to spend it? We know, for instance, the one
you can lose, right?
There's deal with Hammond Sanitary.
2022.
Yeah, Hammond Sanitary's got one for their raker. That's $1 million that they have run into some internal conflict and change in leadership. So. We're going to wait them out on that one, but there are, if it's Maryville, I will tell you, typically they just wait till the very end, and that will take time to close out. But we could ask them as far as what their intentions are, but we encumber all of that in anticipation that they come to us and say, you approved our money, we would like it now, or, you know, that, okay. as in accordance with the interlocal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Counted up as like $1.7 million, but some of these are getting pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We've taken a couple off just because we've asked. For instance, if you remember, you've been here, the Hammond Sanitary had that detention pond off of Columbia Avenue, and they were okay to do it. IDEM agreed to let them do it, and then there was a change in standards for IDEM, and then they backed out. So then they just said, we're not doing it anymore. So,
like a gajillion dollars.
Yeah, it was.
So, Mr. Repay, with regards to upgrading the pump stations, it looks like we're close to 70% done. So are we going to have all of those completed by end of the year?
For the PLCs, the only one that would be missing would be Marshalltown. Is that what you're speaking of? Is
I'm just looking at the upgrades. It doesn't break it down into all how many and which ones, but it says it's 67% complete. And my question is when will it be 100% complete?
Well, it may not be 100% because they might not charge the whole 100% of what we estimated it to cost, because some of these are our costs. So if you're talking about the PLCs, we have a fixed cost. But if you're talking about us upgrading Burr Street, then that those are all been done. All the pumps are in, all the pumps are working, all the pumps have been rehabbed.
Yeah, this is the Superior Engineering. That's just the mother.
That's the PLCs, correct. Right. So right. Those are going to be a little bit longer because we're hanging out for Marshalltown. Marshalltown will be longer, and you'll see probably a large payment for the next month because we're going to be installing them. They tested them. They'll be there to help install them along with our contractor, Glem, to put them in, to make sure that they're done and programmed correctly, because we put a brand new monitoring system in there, so that an alert system, so that we'll all be able to get various methods, not you guys, but they'll get emails, I'll get emails, I'll get phone calls, I'll get text messages if an alarm goes off. Right now, all I get is a text message. And unless I respond to it, it will keep on sending me a text message.
So project status-wise, I guess what Bill is asking, they'll be done 40 years out, but they may not hit 100%.
Yeah, right. I would say 90% would be done this year. 10% I'm holding out for Marshalltown because Marshalltown was ordered later as a part of it. So that's why I would tell you that would be the missing component. But if the PLCs are installed as they're telling me that this will be this week, you're going to see a bill coming in your October payment for a good chunk of this.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Repay? Moving right along, I'm sorry I interrupted you, Mr. Repay. Please introduce the presentation for the Little Calumet Conservation Collaborative for the Marshalltown Marsh Design Plan.
Well, that wasn't even my introduction, but it's what I just said previous. The good folks here, what do we got? Paul and Daniel. We'll be giving a presentation, and hopefully they've logged in, because if they haven't, then they'll get criticized like I do. And then we'll talk about the 60% design of the Marshalltown area as how they envision it and how they got from you guys and from me as to what they want to see there with the meander and some high ground.
So this design isn't coming through your office. This is just what the collaborative thinks that they want to see.
Well, but we also talked to them. I've talked to them, and you guys have given your 2 cents a little bit, but now they want 2 more cents just to make sure that they're on the right glide path. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yeah, I think that's a decent summary. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Mr. President and Commissioners. I'm Paul Botts with the Wetlands Initiative. Calumet River Collaborative. My good colleague here, Daniel Suarez, is going to join me in a moment with some details. I'm here to just kind of actually remind you all of what we're looking at. And this slide that's on the screen here, you ought to recognize from when we were here in April, and we did a sort of an overall project update of all the stuff that's in the works. So now we're just tunneling in on that one piece, the Marshalltown piece, which is in the light pink on that slide there. As you can see, it's a good sized piece. We've been working on this mostly at the design level for a number of years. You will recall that a few years ago, one of the things that we decided to do with your concurrence was to bring in a certain team of the Chicago District Army Corps, not the approval team, not the permitting team, but they have a project design team there, came in, did a formal feasibility level look at this, at the idea of doing, as Dan mentioned, some remeandering in there, using the spoils to create some higher grounds, naturalize it. It, of course, wanted the Army Corps folks to look at it and say, okay, yes, you can do that. Here, make sure you do it in this way to not cause the problems that, of course, we all are very familiar with. And they did that, gave us that thumbs up. So what we've done that Daniel is going to take you some more through on, some specifics, and there's kind of some upcoming milestones on, is that 60% design. We did bring in outside funding, so neither your dime nor ours paid for that, which is great. And that 60% design is almost done. It's going to be a formal report very soon, I think in days or even at most for a couple of weeks. And of course, we're going to collect everybody's feedback on that. And then what Daniel's going to show to you is that we have a very exciting opportunity to fund both the 100% design step, but also potentially start funding the implementation. And the important thing to know about that is that, again, will be all entirely funding outside of this body and our organizations. We are not here today to request a big additional match in addition to the generous support that the commission has been providing for all of this work. And so this is, from my seat, this is an example of what we told you about in April, of all the outside funding that we've already brought in, is about to take a big step forward in dollars and in exciting work on the ground and for and with the community. So with that, let me turn it over to Daniel to walk you through some of the specifics, and then I'll come back and we'll be happy to take any quick questions.
Thank you, Paul. Well, commissioners, nice to see you all again. And this time we've only got a couple of slides, so normally jump into going all sorts of directions, but we're pretty focused on this one today. So as Paul mentioned, we are near.
Sorry, Danny, please do the whole process for the public sector. And
yes,
state
yes,
your
yes.
name and who you are, please.
That's right. My name is Daniel Suarez. I'm the Senior Conservation Manager at Audubon Great Lakes, part of the Little Calumet River Conservation Collaborative.
Thank you, sir.
And the image that you see on the screen is one of the draft 60% designs that we have received from the engineers. We've been working with this engineering firm called ECT for about the last 18 months to understand the potential for restoration of habitat for birds, for people, for hydrology, for the whole West Branch of the Little Calumet River. As Paul mentioned, the funding came from outside sources. There's been a lot of federal funding available through the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law. And this project was funded directly through dollars that came from those bills through NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that has then given money to different entities to coordinate large projects on the ground. Our funding from NOAA was passed through the Coastal States Organization, which works to identify projects that are at the engineering and design phase across the Great Lakes Basin. They choose four projects that they elevate up to NOAA that they recommend for funding. So we were one of the projects chosen last year, and we are nearing this first phase of funding. So we've been meeting with the engineers pretty much monthly since then. And as you can imagine, as you all are aware, the engineering process takes many forms. First, they're kind of doing some general digging, then they're going out into the site, taking samples, taking measurements, looking at the existing on the ground conditions. This process, of which you see part of it on the screen here, these are the proposed future conditions, do feature in a lot of the things that Paul was talking about, looking at potentially remeandering parts of the river, trying to make it longer, slow the water down, and then also creating some new habitats that reflect actually what this area would have looked like 150 years ago, with the river channel surrounded on both sides by healthy floodplain habitat and also some marsh as well. So these designs have been in flux, and this has been an iterative process. The engineers have brought us designs, we've provided feedback, things that we would like to see them explore a little bit more or a little bit less. And as Paul mentioned, we're expecting the design by no later than the end of September, at which point we will share out that report. It'll be the designs, and it'll also be an extensive report laying out what those designs are indicating. As we know, this area is a little bit complicated in terms of land ownership. So we've got lands owned by the commission, by the City of Gary Parks, the Gary Community School Corporation, and a few private landowners as well. The designs, as I mentioned, not only look at proposed future conditions, but existing conditions. They've fleshed out potential areas for access and staging, invasive species control plans, and revegetation plans. The proposed conditions, as I mentioned, contain creating a lot of different kinds of habitat. And one key thing that we've had to kind of learn more about and incorporate into our plans is fish. And when we're working with federal dollars like these, fish passage is always going to be an integral part of assessing the connectivity, hydrologically speaking, and also, you know, protecting our fisheries in the Great Lakes and Lake Michigan. This plan also has incorporated a pretty robust community engagement process. That funding came through a different pot of funds from NOAA, from their Coastal Habitat Restoration and Resilience for Underserved Communities program. And so we've been able to work kind of simultaneously with the engineers to give us designs. And we've been going to community members and learning about not only what you see on the screen, but that little portion at the very top is Hatcher Park, which City of Gary Park. And as we've been learning, the community has in the past and continues to value the space both for what it was and for what it could be. Although right now it's, you know, the maintenance is just getting picked up again. We're starting to do regular mowing. The City of Gary Parks Department is out there beautifying the space and making it a little bit more welcoming to residents. And so as part of this project, we are going to be, now that we're receiving our 60% design, over the next year, we're going to sit down with community members and have some workshops, both to understand, you know, what does and does not resonate with them in terms of this plan, but also trying to find ways of engaging residents from the Marshalltown neighborhood in the top right, from the Ironwood neighborhood in the top left. This was at one point, the Hatcher Park piece at least was a very important community asset, and we'd like for when the project is done, for people to see in this project reflected there, or at least some, to the best of our ability, some of the hopes and dreams that they have for this site. We've recently connected with, you know, we're presenting to you and talking about this project today. We also are, you know, concurrently having these conversations with City of Gary officials. So we've been working with Brenda Scott Henry, who's the Director of Sustainability for the city, and with Lavita Sparks Wade, who is the Gary Parks head of the department, and their teams of engineers also to understand. And we just had that meeting on Monday, and they're supportive of what we're doing and supportive of us moving on to this next phase of design. And so to think about the possible funding sources that Paul was alluding to, because we've already received funds from the government through NOAA to do this initial design, normally they will try to help you see it through full design and implementation. So right now we have two potential funding options that we're weighing right now. One of them we have a good amount of details on, and the other we're still exploring, and we're still looking to have that conversation at the end of September. But the first funding source that we are considering comes through the Great Lakes Commission. This funding would, again, pass through from NOAA. And important for everyone, I guess I should have maybe underlined this a little bit, there's no match requirement for this type of funding source, which is great for all of us. The Great Lakes Commission is attractive in some ways because Audubon has experience working with them at other projects. We just completed a very ambitious hydrologic connectivity project on the southeast side of Chicago with the Great Lakes Commission, and my colleagues in Western New York have worked with the Great Lakes Commission on some marsh restoration projects as well. Because as Paul alluded to, this is a big ambitious project. We're also interested in exploring in this next iteration of design, potentially breaking this project up into phases so that it may be more fundable for federal from federal sources, which some years can be very high, other years not so high. So we want to be prepared for the funding sources that may or may not become available, and potentially look at doing it all in one fell swoop or in phases. If we were to ask the commission for anything, it would most likely be in the form of a letter of support that we could use as part of our proposal, which for the Great Lakes Commission funding is coming up on October 28th. And so that's why we really wanted to get on the agenda today. And thank you, Dan, for squeezing us in, because we wanted to have these conversations, give them an opportunity to breathe, have you folks think it over and ask questions before we actually go through with it. The other source of funding is surprisingly also through NOAA. This is actually would be the same funding pot that funded our initial 60% design. And so we're comfortable working with those partners. We still don't know if there would be a match requirement there. We don't know what the due date is, but we probably would also want a letter of support from the commission to do that work as well. So we're currently weighing these, the Coastal States Organization funding. We're looking at our calendars right now and trying to get something set up for late September. Once we know more about that, we can probably decide which direction we want to go. And at that point, we would come back to you all and ask for a formal blessing to go forward and put in a proposal to fund the 90 to 100% design.
So a couple points I want to emphasize in there. One is I actually think that it would be great, unless it's a problem for you all, I think we should just actually plan to be on the agenda for your October meeting regardless. We will have the 60% design report, and the moment we have it, you'll have it. I can give you a little preview, though, that it addresses a core issue that is a core issue for all of us, and particularly this commission, which is about the impact on hydrology of that lengthening of the river channel that Daniel mentioned. And first of all, I'm not an engineer, but second of all, I don't want to spoil it except to say that the engineers are actually very positive about the hydrologic and flood control impact of doing that. So that was very important. I don't even think we'd be here if we got any other answer. The other thing worth mentioning about the Great Lakes Commission is the Great Lakes Commission is an interstate body. It's been around for decades. It has two commissioners from every Great Lakes state appointed by each state's governor, and it has a lot of influence on many funding streams, not just this one, and it has some policy influence too. And one of the two commissioners for Indiana, Kay Nelson, who I know some of you know and a couple of you know very well, and who was here, Commissioner Nelson was here in April for our presentation to you about the overall update of the project. And that was because she is extremely interested and supportive of this project. And I happen to know through her that the Great Lakes Commission's two Indiana commissioners have been actually quite unhappy with, as Kay puts it, the amount and size and sort of punch of the fundable projects that have come from Northwest Indiana to the Great Lakes Commission. And Northwest Indiana has not done very well with the Great Lakes Commission. So that is a problem for Kay that we're very happy to help her solve. So that's part of a little enthusiasm for us here in what we're doing. So with that, for now, we're happy to entertain questions, but really this is mostly just a glorified heads up for you all. And as I mentioned, very soon we will have that finalized 60% design report. You'll have it at that very moment. And I think we should just plan to be here in October at your meeting, unless that doesn't work for you, to really get into it and answer particular questions. But in the meantime, we're happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have one.
Okay, well, last thing. But before you do that, will you please do me a favor, Mr. Buzz, and put the aerial back up so we can see what we're talking about? So as the questions come up, we have a reference other than
whoops.
That. Thank you. Mr. Projects.
I think that was the second one.
That's a draft.
That was my question. Yeah. In fact, I heard, I think, Commissioner Whitaker and Chairman Baker asking a similar question I'm going to ask. It's hard to tell from this view what's what, like what's the new meandering, like existing versus
sure.
proposed.
So the existing, of course, is a couple of straight lines.
Right.
I mean, they're all straight.
Where are they?
And the big one is just straight east-west. And I don't know, can you use
the
cursor?
To the screen.
That's the existing channel right there. And so the re-meandering is the, the curves above it to the north. That's the channel that, or at least one version, obviously none of this is final. And that area, over here where the cursor is going now, you can see the existing channel, again, a straight line running from northeast to southwest. And those re-meanders there, one difference is that in that area, which is really segmented hydrologically from the rest by the railroad tracks and the very large one-way culvert. I mean, it's a one-way barrier to fish passage, which is one of the things we want to try to fix. But in that area there that he was just pointing to, the re-meanders are narrower, and actually the river to some degree within that area already wants to do it. And we've been out there, looked at the conditions, the engineers looked at the conditions, where you really need to dig out some fill and therefore have some fill to use for topography elsewhere in the site is in that main east-west channel, the first one we looked at. So they're really different in terms of, among other things, cost of the work.
Thank you.
I have a question with regards to the enhancement of the environment. Is that contingent upon the meandering happening?
It is partly contingent on the meandering happening, yes, because slowing the water down helps the river hold more water longer, which helps the wetlands in various ways. For example, this great big dry spell we're having right now. The biota will adjust, so the bird species, the plant species, the insects, all of it. Wetlands are very flexible. They will adjust. This will be a much healthier wetland that will be much better able to withstand, whether it's drought conditions or flood conditions, and adapt to it. And the meanders, many of these species adapted in the first place for situations that include the water slowing down sometimes and not always just rushing through like a giant ditch.
So, Mr. Repake, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding from the Corps' original design is when we have a significant rain event, this whole area goes underwater and that's done on purpose.
Yes.
Well, it's ultimately from the Burke study is controlled by Deep River. So Deep River is just to the east of this location. So once Deep River is rolling, nothing gets past, or very few, not much water gets past I-65, which is just off camera shot here, I think.
Well,
it's designed, that's the open field that you see flooding at I-65 and 94.
So, and that's per the Army Corps of Engineers design. Yes. For that to occur.
Yep, correct.
And with all due respect, our interaction with the Corps since the flood of 2008 has been unique, and they don't seem very open to changing things significant like this. Has that been an ongoing conversation, not just with the environmental group, because this is a bureaucracy, as you guys know, so there's about 87 more approvals that need to happen. Has this idea been introduced to those 87, and I'm being, you know, facetious, have they been introduced to this concept to at least see that through 60% design, 100% design, that we're not going to run into a challenge with the 38th bureaucrat that needs to sign off on this thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, you guys know way better than me that I'm not here to try to be a stargazer about that 38th bureaucrat. But the answer to your question is yes. So both from us, but also through the Army Corps team that did do that feasibility work, they have been introduced to these concepts, only as concepts. Obviously, they were far ahead of any permits being applied for and all that. But the other party, of course, as Commissioner Nimitz knows, you know, very well, is the state of Indiana. It's also has to issue a permit and has also been introduced to this. So this is not a new idea or concept to any of them. They can't, of course, really respond until we go down the road with the proper engineering designs.
So Mr. Repay, as it relates to the design and how a feasibility study, is the feasibility study that you're aware of incorporating the east side of I-65 as well, or is it stopped just at the expressway and not taking into consideration what happens on the other side of I-65?
This project?
Well, I think the entire system is a project. So, I mean, this has a huge impact across the watershed. So I would hope they just didn't look at this little area and that's it.
But only so much water can make it underneath I-65 through that culvert. So that's why I think they're going to check through. I think you guys did some initial checks with the hydraulic department at the Corps to make sure that it didn't negatively impact the flood as it was designed by the Corps.
They specifically, the feasibility state specifically reviewed that question with the hydrologic. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I think
the hydrologic department.
Mr. Chairman, Director Repay's report that said something about moving, what were you talking about earlier, Commissioner Whitaker, Hobart, Lake George Dam, if we can get water through Deep River faster, it helps the system, the little cow. So this is kind of the other side of the coin. This is slowing down the water on this side of it. So it's all good, right?
And
it'll still flood.
And in Gary, it's already slowed down. That's how it's designed by the Corps, is that's why you see the larger impacts, the larger pieces of land. I mean, from levee to levee, it could be a mile or so, whereas in Highland and Hammond, there you could see right across from them. Yeah. So it's designed to store water. Yeah. This will slow it down further and probably purify it and make it less sediment. The sediment should stay here as opposed to downstream.
Sure. Yeah, the sediment thing is very interesting. And of course, very welcome. This area is mostly already a wetlands, just not a very healthy wetlands. This will make it a better sponge. We call wetlands nature sponges. This will improve the sponge in all the ways that have been asked about.
I mean, just so you know, most of this land is either farmed by us, not most, half maybe,
right,
but by us and Gary Parks Department.
Right.
And there is one more party that's got a direct stake in all this, which of course is NiSource. It's not really visible on it. We can sort of see it on this image, but it's not really super clear. But you know, they have the. You want to go to the previous one?
Well, I could show that.
Yeah, right there. There you go. Yeah, that's the yeah. That Rice. They go right through there. They're core. They're project partner. They're on board. We've met with them. They're actually now starting to fund this work in a pretty exciting way. And so they're totally on board, and obviously also a party that is looking for that 60% design document and so forth, because it directly affects that potentially.
I have a couple questions.
Please.
First of all, I want to compliment you. It's a fantastic design. I think it's going to be a great part for the city of Gary. But I have a couple of questions. One, how much money are you looking for in order to complete this project? Second, is the Audubon Society putting anything into this particular project? And what is going to be the recreation value for the city of Marshalltown?
Well, let's go in reverse order, because the recreational value is at the heart, of course, of the public engagement that we've already done and that we're going to do in a more intensive way, as Daniel described. And that effort is led by Audubon, which has a lot of expertise in doing that with communities adjacent to projects like this. And so I think, but members of the community will further inform us as to their wishes on this, but it's enormous recreational potential here. The community is already recreating. I was startled the first time I discovered local folks out there fishing in the little triangle area there next to the railroad culvert. So they were having a high old time and on the right conditions getting some great fish. They're not fishing in the segments below it because there's no fish passage. And they're not fishing in that straight ditch there because there's no particular good place to do it.
But I know those flags.
Right. And so we've gotten that feedback already, right. But there's also the potential here. You're talking about paths, you're talking about overlooks,
right.
You're talking about really lovely spaces. Bringing this kind of benefit, this kind of community asset directly to these communities. Yeah. You don't have to go drive to go do it. Yeah. That's very exciting. So you asked about the three questions. Well, first was the cost. The second was, the third was the community.
The question I had for the Audubon Society itself. Oh, such a huge organization.
We are all putting funds in. Yes.
Are they putting anything into the
absolutely
financing?
All of our organizations, my organization, which of course is much smaller than his, but my organization, as well as the Nature Conservancy of Indiana right now, is putting in their, helping to pay for the crew supervisor now, which is direct match. Lake County Parks has already put some funds into this. They're actually have the crew in the payroll, as you may recall. So all of us are fundraising and putting in match at our various scales for all of this work. Right here, the initial ballpark estimate you're going to see in that 60% design is for the grand total of all of this with all the earth moving is in the range of $15 to $18 million.
Okay.
We think we can shave that, but you know, we'll see. My organization and his and TNC all have lots of experience in moving dirt for this purpose, kind of why we exist. So that's a story yet to be told. And I don't know what the cost estimate of getting the 100% design is, much smaller than what we are.
Just for the engineering?
Just to do the engineering.
Probably in the ballpark of like 150 to. Yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of the heavy lifting is, but you're going to be in eight figures here. There's no question about that.
Well, that's a massive project, and the whole state of Indiana would be proud to do that. But I have one last question. Yeah. Do you have any kind of artistic drawing of it that what it's going to look like?
There will be. We had asked the engineers if they could complete a rendering. We had a meeting on Friday where they shared this design. We said we need something a little bit more visually appealing to people who don't know how to read engineering plans. And they thought that they would be able to share something with us by today, but that will be included in the 60% design. Not just one rendering. We asked for a couple of renderings showing some of these areas, what they might look like with people in them also. So those are forthcoming.
And one last question. You said you got NIPSCO involved as far as the funding source.
Mm-hmm.
How about trying Nippon Steel? That's a suggestion. And we'll become there. Next time I have to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, commission
the weather record.
All right, any other questions, greetings, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Paul and Daniel, thank you for being here. Appreciate you and appreciate the presentation. Paul, you mentioned a story yet to be told, but just for some clarification, the Little County River Basin Development Commission has worked with the collaborative mostly on invasive plant control, on bird monitoring, and prescribed fire, a variety of things. Well, not so much the creation of wetlands.
Right.
And so we have wetlands that have been protected and that you are improving habitat. But can you talk to your experience on actually creating wetlands and what that might look like from us? Also, thinking about the design, I look at the photograph in front of us and I think in the lower left corner, that's marsh. There used to be a low head dam down in there that has been removed, and there have been muskrats and beaver that have flooded at different times of the year. And I understand moving that course of water in there because it naturally wants to do it, as you mentioned. And then there's the waterfall underneath the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. I would recommend starting those conversations with the railroad company because that is a pinch point. I mean, as you said, fish aren't going up the waterfall.
Right.
And that's a culvert under the railroad track. So if that hasn't happened yet, that's something you might want to do.
Sure.
But but can you talk about your experience and what we might expect in the creation of wetlands?
So my organization, the Wetlands Initiative, as well as Audubon and Nature Conservancy of Indiana, all have direct experience doing exactly this kind of work. Moving dirt and planting and resculpting an area to make a healthy multi, we still use the phrase multi-benefit project kind of wetland. My organization was put on the map 25 years ago with a 3,000 acre site in Illinois along the Illinois River, where it had been farmed, levied off, pump station, drainage district, farmed for 75 years, flat. We have the photos. And there was a point as of about 1999 when the eight families that owned it formed that drainage district were kind of, well, they were actually falling out with each other. They were looking at $1 million bill to try to repair the levee. The Army Corps was on their back. Then the Army Corps washed their hands of them, which you guys know what that must have been like. And so our fledgling organization found some financing and purchased it on the idea that this area that, again, had been drained and levied and flat for 75 years could be restored to real health, a real wetlands, as who you're referencing, with the kinds of productivity and public access benefits that you're talking about here. And there were people in conservation, our peers, with organizations such as Nature Conservancy, were very skeptical, say, I'm not sure you guys can pull that off, but I'm not sure if you can, that it'll be while anybody living will be around to see it. Well, I'm happy to say, as a startup, you don't have to listen to the naysayers. So our two founders raised the money, went ahead and did it. And today it is called the Dixon Waterfowl Refuge. It is a beloved site. It's on every birder list in the Midwest. It is a Ramsar wetland of international importance. It gets public visitation like crazy. And it is very similar to this. We moved a lot of dirt three different times. We also had to do a lot of other stuff that doesn't apply here. So that is really the foundation of our organization. And I know for a fact, and the reference big projects that Audubon's been involved with around the Great Lakes at big sites that are disconnected, that are channelized, that are all these things, they know how to do the design and move through and do implementation with partners. Certainly Lake County Parks, you all know better than me, is an agency that has become a restoration agency. They have done wetlands. I don't think they've done a wetland as big as this yet. So we're helping them raise their game. But they know how to do a lot of this stuff. And Nature Conservancy is, you know, the biggest in our sector. And they have expertise at scales even beyond what either of us have been involved with. So I think you have all the right expertise here. And the last thing I'll say is, it is not an accident that my organization, the top level of our program team, is two people that lead it. A PhD ecologist, as you'd expect, and who you know, Gary Sullivan, and a PhD environmental engineer. And that's baked in, because if you're going to restore and create wetlands in urban and suburban areas where you have constraints, the railroad isn't moving, those culverts aren't moving, none of that stuff is moving, you're working with what you have here, you have to have the engineering knowledge. Otherwise, you will fail, plain and simple. So that's how we look at it. And so I believe actually very strongly that this collaborative has the right expertise to pull us off.
Thank you.
Any other questions for these gentlemen?
Just one last question. Is there any significance to the bottom left corner that Derek, Commissioner Nimitz referenced, those two, those two locations that are opposite each other?
Those two dark spots right
here?
Those are potential spoil piles where we could build up the land, elevate it a little bit, and potentially connect it to trails at Ironwood Park.
That's where you could have a lookout. That would be maybe a nice platform up over overlooking the wetland. You know, make good use of the spoilers. Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, folks, other issues, new business, moving right along.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 2024-13 to authorize the disposal of obsolete surplus property consisting of 14 metal filing cabinets, 2 bookcases, and 10 office chairs in accordance with Indiana State Statute IC5-22-22-1, subject to final draft and approval by attorney, executive director, and chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Pick one, Mrs. Lambert, Mr. Repay.
We've scanned almost all of our documents that we have, and we know
how many years of that was it?
It took 3 summers plus breaks and Christmases where we've had college students doing that. So the only thing that we have right now that I don't think has been scanned are the things that were subject to our audit, which will be coming in the next 2 or 3 months, I think.
So most of this surplus is for filing or holding old files and drawings from back in the day, primarily back before 2008.
Yeah, we brought them over when we moved in 2011.
Got it. Any questions for Mr. Repay on this one? And a motion and second, Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
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 Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert
Ochi? Yes.
Lamont
yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 2024-14 and the interlocal agreement with the City of Crown Point for the Edgewater Flooding Mitigation Watershed Project in the amount of $40,000, subject to final draft and approval by attorney, executive director, and chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Ipe.
This is for the design of a new culvert that has been now a restriction that will allow for better movement of the water for 33 homes, 4 roadways, and the Edgewater subdivision. This will not be the only one. Eventually, we'll have some others that we need to upgrade as well. So,
is this feeding into a beaver dam ditch, or is this?
Ultimately does, not directly. It goes through a lateral, then it goes to beaver dam ditch.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Repay on this one? If there are none, we have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnick.
Yes.
Sarah Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
Lamont Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion to deny the City of Holbrook's watershed application for the construction of the Stinky Creek Diversion and Regional Stormwater Project.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay, this is a new one. This has been around for a while.
Yes. It was applied for by the City of Holbrook. There was a lot of coordination by the City of Holbrook with different municipalities and entities, us included. Just about the time we were going to make a decision, the decision was made to have Burke do the study, and we put this sort of into that study as to the effectiveness of it. For the cost of $9 million of the ask, I don't think it drains as much as it needs to. I'm sure there could be some debate. It helps the subdivision, but not necessarily large enough to necessarily justify that cost.
Any questions for Mr. Repay on this one?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Dan, we paid for it. We contributed to the design.
Oh, yeah, we designed at 80% for the design of this. So the whole goal behind this was to get water to Deep River faster so they could get out so that it's less pressure on the City of Gary and the rest of the LoCal system. So that was the sort of behind there, and there was some value there. It took, I believe, if I remember correctly, 9 hours off the travel time for this water to make it, because this water would make it underneath I-65, make it to Turkey Creek, that makes it to Deep River, then eventually around. But you know, you look at the cost benefit, and that's, you know, it was determined. I don't think there was much benefit outside that one subdivision. for that amount.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Repay on this one? Either none, Mrs. Lambert, there's a motion and a second.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnick?
Yes.
Derek
Yes.
David Castellano?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
Robert Ochi?
Yes.
Levon Whitaker?
Yes.
Yes. All right, moving right along. Next is my favorite part, statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us with some of these projects, have an opinion, want to make sure that that doesn't happen again, please come to the microphone, state your name and address for the record.
My name is Doreen Carey. I'm a resident of the city of Gary, 7304 Indian Boundary. And I'm here tonight because I am expressing disappointment in the fact that my understanding is that the commission has approved another lease payment from Maya Energy LLC to build a municipal solid waste processing facility on your property. Now, this is despite the opposition of the city of Gary, Gary Common Council, Gary residents and river neighbors, and local organizations like Gary Advocates for Responsible Development. Now, the lease of this property for this purpose does not meet the statutory requirements that apply to the commission, and that is, number one, promote the general health and welfare of the citizens of Indiana, and number two, to provide for the creation, development, maintenance, administration of parks, recreation, marinas, flood control, and other public works projects, including levees. Building a garbage facility on your property near the river, near recreational opportunities, currently near a school, just down around the corner from your own artesian well project, and in the future, more public access and recreational opportunities along Chase Street and in the Chase Street area. My question is, how can you continue to take money for a project that is so unrepresentative of what this community wants, and the company itself does not have any experience to process waste? It has not been able to create the necessary applications to do any work in the city of Gary. Why do you continue to support this project? Oh, is there no
question?
Answer? Yes, it is a question. There was a question mark after that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to address that. I mean, it's not the responsibility of this particular group as far as what that function is on top of that site. So that has to go through the city for the approvals and whatnot as far as any development that happens on the site. We just have a license for that land, and it's $100,000 plus or minus a year for that particular scenario, under the premise that it was economic development at the time when we did that deal, of which it was a recycling plant. As that transformed, that has to go through the process with the state, as I'm sure you and your advocates have been aware of, as it pertains to getting the approvals necessary to do what they're doing. So those are outside of the confines of what we're doing, my opinion.
What about the statutory requirements of what the responsibilities of the
and it's all through a lawsuit, so we can't have this discussion to any more extent than to explain some of the history.
Well, thank you for that, but I would hope that the commissioners would reconsider this company that does not have a good record for any of its operations, whether it's meeting the obligations of the permit that was given to it to construct and operate this facility, which we were opposed to for a variety of reasons that I've expressed, and also the opposition of the current administration of the city, the current city council, and always the opposition of local residents and environmental organizations.
Yes, ma'am, duly noted.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Carol Dupree, and I live 8241 Locust Avenue in Gary. And I'd like to add to what Doreen just talked about. These people came to The city of Garien said that they wanted to start a recycling facility on Chase Street that would basically be glass and cardboard. I mean, how benign can you get? Well, that morphed into something on 35th, which was garbage recycling, where garbage trucks would be coming down 35th Avenue, which, as you know, is built on a floodplain, and it's kind of wavy and not very stable. And what they projected was that there would be garbage trucks coming in 24/7, 6 days a week. And there was never anything said by you or at that time by the city about this morphing from something very benign into something very destructive. But we did have a chance to do that. There was an opportunity to do that when it became clear that this was not a reliable company. Not that I think garbage process people that want to turn garbage into fuel are reliable. I mean, nobody has ever been able to really do it reliably. But in any case, I just want to tell you my experience with these people. I got a call from a friend who has a business there. He said this was about 4 months ago, I think. And they said, well, they're out there digging on the site where Maya wants to build. So I went out there, and it turns out they said they were making a driveway off of 35th to access the land. And they were very, very kind to me, and they showed me everything, and they showed me their permit, which in fact was not the correct permit. They needed a stormwater permit because, in essence, they were out there digging in a culvert because they were trying to connect their sewer pipes to the city's, and they didn't have permission to do that. So they don't have all the correct anything to do this. All they have is outstanding permits from IDEM, IDEM does not seem to be paying much attention, but you guys are. You know about this. You know, this has been, you've been brought to you many, many times, and I find it very disrespectful that these people are still allowed to come and just thumb their nose at us. If my friend hadn't called me and told me what they were doing, and I went out there and confronted them, and then I might add, when Brenda Scott Henry came out to tell them that they, to stop the job, that they didn't have a permit, which they needed to get from her, they were very rude and ugly to her. Extremely rude and ugly. These are the kind of people they are. These are not good people. And so, you know, you can say, well, City of Gary, you know, agreed to this originally, and that's what we're hanging our head on. But we've gotten beyond that. And authenticity and credibility should amount to something. And like Doreen said, there is nothing in the statute that says that the little cow can offer land for a garbage processing facility. In addition to which, one more thing, 35th Avenue would not sustain that kind of traffic ever. It just wouldn't. And on one side is a culvert and the other side is frontage, so it can't be widened. So how are they going to do this? The whole project is just ridiculous. And yet, this commission keeps taking the money. I don't get it.
Thank you, ma'am.
No answer?
No. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Hello. 7142 Forest Avenue. Lady and gentlemen, I'm here with belated congratulations for you. We're finally closing out the project with the Army Corps. I also want to thank you for continuing to hammer at them for credits, to which we were entitled, which you did a wonderful job in getting, not having to pay them and actually getting money back from them. That's got to be a record.
Only one in the country.
I can't imagine that the government never gives money back, tell the truth. I'd also like to address a very large, mean, no trespassing sign that has recently, I know, Dan, I'm just sharing my neighbor's thoughts. No trespassing sign has been placed adjacent to the levee. I've heard from a number of neighbors, they're very sad that they no longer can use the levee. I just want to say it's a shame that we have one bad apple that has spoiled the basket, and I'm wondering if there is not something else we can do. It has definitely taken away any recreational portion of that levee for my neighborhood. Dan, I know who it is. I've spoken to Dan, but I told my neighbors I would share their sadness.
Well, I have to give the board some background. I'm sorry, are you done?
I have one more thing, but I can
wait. Go ahead.
Nope. Okay. And lastly, I recently went and paid for my supplemental flood insurance, which is greatly a far lesser money than I used to pay. But I found it interesting that my insurance agent is telling me that less and less people are buying that supplemental flood insurance. And I would just like to encourage anybody who lives close to, nearby, in sight of, in the vicinity of, to please don't pass up that flood insurance. While everything is working beautifully, by the grace of God, it could change in a heartbeat. And I just want to put that out there. People have spent a long time and people forget. And I just want to remind people.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Ripe?
Just to give you some background quickly, the area in question is between Holman and State Line, where the Forest Avenue levee is. We have an easement to maintain it to make sure it's working in functional order. However, it's not a part of the formal core recreational trail, so there's not a recreational easement on it. So what has been come to be something of a norm where people in the neighborhood would walk on the top of the levee, which we necessarily didn't have a problem with. It technically isn't our land to give it. It's all the landowners that have it, and there is someone that doesn't want that, and that's certainly their prerogative. And so I put a terrible no trespassing sign up there that we had in our inventory. And so that's what the history of it is. So
wait, you said it's not our land?
We have an easement to maintain the levee, but there is no easement there for recreation. So it's very similar to most parts in Munster also have that same thing where if you go by Beach Park, there is an easement for us to maintain the levee to make sure it, and we can do it and or our contractors. However, it isn't meant to walk in people's backyards. And that's in this scenario what it would be, and it's this scenario in other places too.
So is the top of the levee considered people's backyards?
Correct. They own to the middle of the river roughly.
So we put up a sign telling people they can't use their own backyard?
No, the issue is there's visitors from other parts of the neighborhood that walk up there in the typical fashion, and I'm sure Laura will tell you, is they walk up on top, they go all the way to Holman Avenue, and they make a big circle.
The kids fish up there.
Yeah, so.
Okay, some neighbors didn't like it.
Does not. And it is close quarters. It's close quarters.
Yeah.
So it is what I have, whatever it is. Lori's called me here before.
Sheep piles, right? There's sheep piles.
No, it's actual levee. The sheep piles are embedded inside of it, right. But you would, when you walk up there, you can, some of the clay places of those historical structures, remember that levee was initially constructed back in the 80s by the city of Hammond, and then we had it recertified back in 2000.
So if you're on top, you can be looking at somebody's kitchen or their, right?
Potential, their, or their backyard.
Anyway, I thank you for your time. Like I said, I've had a number of neighbors.
I got those calls.
So I came to share their concerns.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else? No minds? No advice? Bring it back to the board. Let's have final thoughts. Mr. Castellanos, you're up first today.
Oh, wow. Isn't there something else, huh?
Something else. Okay.
First of all, I want to say one thing. That's, I want to compliment Ms. Craig, Carol McCready, and Doreen for coming forward and expressing your feelings and your thoughts in regards to the Maya I also feel right with you, but we are hung up by the law. That's our situation, right? That's right. And I agree with anything that you say, but we're hung up with coming to a law situation that I don't think we can get out of it as an organization. But so in that case, that's where I'm coming from there. The other thing I want to say is that I would like to compliment the gentleman from the Daniel and Mr. Paul. I can't get your last name.
Boss.
Okay, that was a very good presentation. Thank you. It's good to see that the city of Gary is going to get something, some worth for a chain. It's going to be a national, hopefully it might be considered a national monument once it happens. Business. It's truly overdue. And the other thing I want to suggest to everybody, too, is to get a chance to listen to our radio program, WLTH, on the second Monday of every month. It's going to be a very good meeting, I guarantee you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ochi.
Just like to say thank you for the presentation for the Audubon Society. It's a very great start for the concepts, and we'll look forward to the 60% document presentation next month or the month after.
Mr. Chairman, not much to add. Just thank the public for their comments and the presentation as well. Good to see you.
Mr. Gazdecki.
Yeah, I'll echo Anthony's comments. Thank you for everybody that's here. Thank you for your passion for CON. I can agree that we're here to best serve the interest of the entire watershed and try our hardest. It's not always easy, but I'm proud of the effort of the board and proud of the community for their passion.
Thank you. Mr. Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Echo what my colleagues have said thus far and everyone's participation here at the meeting this evening, those that are here in person and those that are joining as well by video conference. Certainly want to continue as we sort of come to the close of the calendar year. I think we've had quite a bit of an eventful year. And I think, you know, the charge that we have, which is as any board member is continuing to set policy. And whether we corporately agree or not individually, that's our responsibilities as individuals throughout the state, whether it's a county or a municipality, a town or township, we have that charge. And I think we do a very good job in operational and maintenance, and hoping that I know everyone has the desire to want to do the best that we can across all sectors of organizational development, leadership development, executive leadership, as well as resource development, as we've experienced tonight in the presentation from the gentleman Paul and Daniel. From a governance standpoint, we want to do the best job that we can. And just as, you know, self-respecting electrician can't install a switch, or a beautician can't do a hairstyle. As board members, all board members and governance structures, we ought to all pursue doing the best job that we can, have that dignity of self-respect, and make sure that we do it to our utmost best in representation of people, whether publicly elected or whether publicly selected. And I know that we all have the best interest of the public, so I know that that can happen. And with that being said, certainly where one has to say the rest of the month and the rest of the year as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nimitz.
Nothing to add.
Thank you, Mr. Ware.
Outstanding presentations this evening, Paul and Daniel. Very interesting for somebody that doesn't have as much of background as you and or some of the other commissioners here. So very interesting. Thanks to those attending the meeting tonight, and have a safe month.
Thank you. Mr. Wicklund.
Nothing to add.
Mrs. Lambert, is this the month?
Yeah.
No. Sarika, you done?
Yeah.
Great. Next meeting, check the website, is third Wednesday, which is October 16th. We're running out of months in 2024. Thank you for coming out, everybody, and we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much. Be safe going home, everybody.